welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and in this episode, it's another edition of the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable featuring the writers of Cottagers Confidential. Tonight, joining me is David Kettlehake, Thomas Airy, and editor Andrew Beck. We have a ton to get through, but before we do anything, I have to bring on all of my co-hosts. First, I want to welcome back Mr. David Kettlehake. David, how you doing?
Hey, Russ. Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Listen, you were with us for the initial show, and you were great, my friend. Look forward to talking phone with you tonight.
I'm looking forward to it. Again, great to be back. Thanks.
Okay, fantastic. Also on the line with us is making his debut, Thomas Airy. Thomas, welcome to Cottage Talk.
Thanks for inviting me, Ross. It should be fun.
It definitely should be. And along with the two of you, we have the editor of Cottagers Confidential, Mr. Andrew Beck. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, and I got to see West Ham lose last night, so that's even better.
Well, what a great way to start the show. Thank you for sharing that, Andrew. Okay, guys, let's get going into the show. And, Andrew, I'm going to start with you, and then we're going to go through everyone with these topics. This section I'm calling Players, Signing, and Departures. So let's start with the signing. I actually talked to Mike Gregg about this last night, but I want to get your thoughts and also the other writers' thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on Fulham signing winger Floyd Kayete, and I'm probably saying that wrong, from Bashta? What are your thoughts of this signing?
It's a signing I kind of like a lot. I talked to a bunch of other SB Nation writers who follow the French League a lot closer than I do, just trying to get an idea of how good the French League is. And the general consensus is that outside of the top few teams, it's about the same quality as the championship. And so he's not going to have that big of an adjustment coming from that league to the championship. That's always kind of the thing when Michael Maddel comes over from Austria, or
right.
Matila comes over from Finland, and someone comes from Bulgaria. You just never quite know how they're going to do when they move up to a higher quality league. And since he's already playing in a league at least as good as the championship, I think that's a good sign for him. And he kind of fits the position of need. We really don't have very many wide players. And if we're going to play like a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, he can play pretty much any of the three attacking positions behind a striker.
No, listen, definitely. And, Andrew, the one thing that jumped out at me, all of us have probably watched the videos, but I've been reading a good amount about this player before I go to the co-host. The one thing that we've talked about so much on Cottage Talk has been the lack of pace. Andrew, everything I've read about this player is that he has a ton of pace. Does that encourage you?
Yes, it does, especially on the outside, if he's going to play one of the outside positions, or even someone behind McCormick, if McCormick's going to be your central striker, McCormick gets the ball, it's nice to have someone fast playing off of him. I was just watching, we published a Moussa Dembélé article today. I was watching some of the Moussa Dembélé highlights, and there were quite a few times where there was some interplay like that where McCormick had a ball and just laid it off to a streaking Dembélé, and it's be nice to have more guys with that kind of pace out on the pitch, especially now that Dembélé is gone.
Absolutely. Very good take there, my friend. All right, I'm going to bring on Thomas and get his thoughts here. Thomas, what are your thoughts about the signing? I'll just share something with you before you share what you think about it. Interesting, as I've been reading about Kayete, and I hope I'm saying his last name right, I'm just going to call him Floyd. What I've been reading about him is that he can play either wing. He could also play up front. So he's a versatile player, like I mentioned, with pace. What are your thoughts on the signing?
I really like the signing. I was talking to Andrew earlier before we signed him, and I was saying that we needed a pacey winger with some good skills to really further our attacking options. And I think from what I've watched, Ayite really looks to fulfill all of those requirements. And he's got a really nice shot on him. I think that who scored said that he had trouble finishing, but from the goals
right.
he scored, it looks like he is a really good
Tremendous.
Finisher of the ball.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, very good, my friend. Very good. Continue,
they don't
I'm
usually
sorry.
Have the ones he misses on the highlight reels, but with the goals he scores, he should be able to finish the chances that he gets, just like McCormack would or Kearney. It seems like he's a really good player.
Yeah, listen, everything that I've read about him is that I read two pieces that actually rated him as a lower Premier League team type of player. So that would obviously be a very good fit for us, considering he's going to be playing in the Championship. All right, I'm now going to bring on Mr. Kettle Hake. David, how are you doing? I want to get your thoughts on this. And this is something that I also I'm going to share something that I talked to Mike Gregg about, which I found fascinating. If you read a little bit about him on the Fulham website, the article basically introducing you to Floyd, I read that that Seiko Fofana actually recommended Fulham to him. So what are your thoughts about that, and also on this signing for Fulham?
Well, I made a note here about Seiko Fofana. I know you and Mike Gregg talked about this yesterday, and you know, that's heartening. We've had a kind of a sense lately that maybe Fulham may not have quite the cachet that it used to. So to get some former players talking to potential signings and keep us in a good light is that's heartening. That's really good. As far as his name is concerned, I'm going to wait till Gentleman Jim pronounces it. I mean, I remember how much trouble he had with Pavel Pobregniak, so we're going to see what he does with Aite.
Yes.
And when someone like this is signed, I mean, I've never heard of him before this, so I immediately zip off to WhoScored.com just to see what he's all about. You know, like the other gentlemen have said, you know, not bad at his left foot, better than his right, good for slashing runs, 32 appearances in League One, I think it was 8 goals. But the biggest thing, big bold letters, is pace, 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 because
absolutely,
we just haven't had enough. I've talked about that before. And when you don't have it, your defense suffers, and you talk about a suffering defense. So the more pace we can get in the middle and up top, the more pressure we can put on the other team's defense, and the bigger rest we can give ours. So I'm
absolutely
happy to see him sign. I hope he can finish a little bit better than WhoScored.com says he can, so we'll see.
No, I hear you there, David. And before we move on, I also want to mention that please do follow a friend of mine. You know, Fulham are currently in Ireland, and, you know, and I'm sorry I haven't mentioned this before. They're in Ireland training, and they actually had a match today, which they won 5-0 against Cobb Ramblers. If you go on the Fulham website, well, actually, I shouldn't say the website. If you go on the Fulham Football Club Twitter page, they actually have a quick video, so you can check out all the goals there. So, and please do also follow. I've got someone in Ireland for everyone to follow. His name's Brendan Cronin. His handle on Twitter is BW Cronin. He has been tweeting a good amount about Fulham. He was actually there today, so give him a follow if you haven't already. Just want to mention that. David, back to you, because the first part of the show is basically going to be talking about things I've already talked to Mike about, and then we're going to go in a different direction, because I still think that I want to get your thoughts and the other writers' thoughts about the signing, but also players leaving. So let's now talk about Martin Stekelenburg leaving Fulham to go to Everton. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know the frowny face emoji people use now? I think
right.
That was actually designed using his permanent expression. He never looked happy. He never looked content. Fish out of water for us. And I know we paid a lot of money for him, but he was prone to getting injured, and he cost us an arm and a leg, us being the club, and I'm happy to see him go and wish him well, as long as it's elsewhere.
I'm there with you. All right, let me bring Andrew back on. Andrew, what are your thoughts about Fulham finally selling Martin Stekelenburg to Everton?
It's just kind of amazing how far that guy has fallen. I mean, he was bought for, I think, an $11 million transfer to Roma, and he started a World Cup final, and then he basically can't find playing time anymore. It's just really ridiculous what can happen to him. I was really excited when he came to Fulham, and he just never did anything. And I imagine he was on very, very high wages. So just not having his wages on the books anymore is going to give Fulham a lot more money to spend.
No, I definitely agree with you there. Andrew, while we're talking about Stekelenburg, and then I'll get Thomas's thoughts on it. We've talked about this before. Does this give you a signal that Fulham are going to sign another goalkeeper?
I think they almost have to. I mean, because if you assume that Bettinelli is going to be the number one and they're not going to sign someone to push him and they think he's the number one, that's left with Jesse Gironen as your backup. And
right,
he probably needs to be either alone somewhere or just to focus on playing with the U21s, because just sitting on the bench isn't going to be the greatest thing for a 22, 23-year-old goalkeeper. I can't remember exactly how old he is. So you'd think that you would want one more just so that he could be loaned out. And then if one of the Gironen or Bettinelli were to get hurt, you'd be using basically someone from your academy as your backup goalkeeper after that. So I think that they almost have to bring in somebody. It'll be interesting to see what they do if it's a guy like they brought in last year, where with Longoran, where it's like, okay, he's here as the backup and Bettinelli's the guy, or if they bring in someone who is, you could see as being the first team goalkeeper and they're going to try to push Bettinelli.
Right. And what's interesting, Andrew, even today I saw them linked to a goalkeeper. Nothing, again, just Twitter talk, so I don't want to mention that goalkeeper. If you're on Twitter, you probably saw the name. They've also been linked to Alex McCarthy. I've seen some speculation on that. So the question is, if they do bring in a goalkeeper, is it for competition or is it to be the number one goalkeeper?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, very good. I'm going to bring Thomas back on and get his thoughts on this. Thomas, what are your thoughts about Martin Stekelenburg moving to Everton? And then to go off on what Andrew and I were just talking about, do you see them bringing in a goalkeeper? I do. And the question is, do you see them trying to bring in a goalkeeper as a backup or potentially be a number one goalkeeper?
I'm happy to see Stekelenburg go. He just wasn't good enough, not even in the Premier League. Stockdale started over him, and Roma got rid of him. They brought in a new goalkeeper because he just wasn't any good. After the World Cup, he just deteriorated rapidly, and he's not a very good goalkeeper, so I'm very confused as to why Everton signed him. Obviously, Steve Mandanda signed for Crystal Palace, and he was a top-tier goalkeeper in France. And I consider Everton a bigger team than Crystal Palace, so I'm confused as to why they would go to Stekelenburg for their goalkeeping needs.
As for moving forward, what do you think Fulham are going to do with bringing in a goalkeeper? I think we all believe that they're going to bring in a goalkeeper. The question is, would it be to be a backup or would it be to potentially compete for a starting job?
I definitely think it'll be a competition because Bettinelli, although he is young, he has played well. You can't just give a starting place to someone. It's not – when players get a guaranteed starting place, assuming they're not top quality, they become lazy. They become kind of complacent. And so it's always good to have someone like Lonergan there. But obviously Lonergan wasn't good enough for Jokanović. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him bringing in somebody like McCarthy, someone who's got Premier League experience and is a very decent goalkeeper to play against Bettinelli and maybe even be the new starting goalkeeper if he doesn't think Bettinelli's good enough.
I tend to agree with you. And again, I've seen some speculation over the past couple of weeks linking us and in the past to Alex McCarthy. We'll see how that goes. And like I mentioned, there's been another goalkeeper that I saw today, but just some Twitter speculation, so I don't want to take it any further than that. All right, Thomas, let's move on. And third topic in player signing and departures is talking about Ben Pringle. What are your thoughts about Ben Pringle leaving Fulham and going to Preston North End?
I think at the end of the day, it's just that we signed Ayite, and he's just better than Ben Pringle. Ben Pringle was a little bit hyped up. I think we thought he was going to produce a little more than he did. And I think he was just not as good as we thought he would be. I think he thrives more in a system where it's built more around him or where he is the main source of attacking, like at Rotherham when he was player this season. But here you've got McCormack, you've got Kearney. Those guys will get the ball more than him. And he wasn't starting. He just wasn't good enough. And now bringing in Ayite leaves there no room for Pringle to really play. He's just not good enough.
No, listen, what's interesting about Pringle, and we talked about this on the show yesterday, I was pretty high on him coming in, Thomas. The problem that I had is that, I watched him at Rotherham, and I do think that playing him the way that we played him probably was a factor. I also want to mention something that Mike Gregg said last night, and I want to get your thoughts on it before I go to Andrew. Moving to London could have been a factor as well. You know, sports here, you know, I live in Boston. That's always been a factor with some players coming to the Red Sox, not being able to handle playing in the market that's Boston. Well, coming to London, playing for Fulham, you know, maybe that was a factor. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, in baseball, I don't know if you follow it correctly, A.J. Burnett is a key example where he goes to big market teams and he fails. He went to the Yankees
Absolutely.
And was
Good point.
Horrible. And then he goes to the Pirates and he becomes the same player he was with the Blue Jays. And I think it could be exactly the same with Ben Pringle. He could go to Preston North End and he could be a star. But you can't look at that and regret selling him because he will never be good enough in a big market team. He just thrives in low market, low pressure teams. And there's nothing you can do about that. You can't try and make him a big team, big atmosphere player. He just never will be.
No, listen, it was something that Mike brought up, and I really gave it some thought. And I've seen other people mention that as well, that maybe moving to London was a factor here. Maybe it is. All right, my friend, I'm going to bring Andrew back on. Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on Pringle and want to find out what you're thinking about this whole talk that Thomas and I were talking about in regards to moving to London. But also this, Mike had said this to me, that our expectations were that he was going to be a true winger. And maybe our expectations were we were expecting something different. So maybe that affected how we viewed Pringle. What are your thoughts about that and also Pringle moving to Preston North End?
I'm not really sad to see him go. I was high on him too when he came in. He seemed like he'd been good at Rotherham. But he actually scored in one of the first few games of the season and then he just kind of disappeared after that. And then new coach comes in and they don't even seem to care for him and he's loaned out and he's gone. So it wasn't just us that had some questions about how good he was. Obviously Slavisa did as well. I don't know if it's the market so much that being in London, because I mean, there's not a ton of press around Fulham. I mean, he's in the papers a little bit more than he would be up north. But I also wonder if just he seemed to have spent his whole career basically up in the north more. And this was the first time he was living in London. And just that's a big change for someone if you've always lived up in the north and then all of a sudden you're in London. It's just a much different kind of place. So there could have been off the field stuff. We really just have no idea what was going on, but
sure.
He just never lived up to expectations. He never really fit in the wing and he really couldn't use him as the central attacking mid because, you know, McCormack drops into that space. You have Kearney. He just really never found a place to fit in on the club. And, you know, if they got some money for him, maybe got close to breaking even on what they paid for him. I'm not sad to see him go. Hopefully he'll get some more playing time at Preston and, you know, he can have success there.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, I'm going to bring David on to get the final word on this. And David, one other thing that I want to mention, again, going back to my conversation with Mike from yesterday, he also brought up, we're talking about, you know, some of the factors that could have played why he didn't work out. Something else that he mentioned, big fish in a little pond. You know, playing at Rotherham, you know, he was the big fish. Well, he comes to Fulham, it's a different type of team. It's really, you know, the big fish really is McCormack. Maybe that was a factor here. What are your thoughts about all this in regards to Ben Pringle?
Well, I was kind of high on him too when he came in. I mean, I watched some of the video, and he's got that killer left foot, a great cross. I mean, just, you know, when he had an opportunity, he could really put it in the box and do a great job there. But you know what? Like so many players we talked about, he's too slow.
Yeah.
And he's not really a winger as much as some of the others. And, you know, at Rotherham, yeah, and at Preston, he'll be a bigger fish, and, you know, he'll get a little bit more attention. I don't know if that's, you know, the end all for him, but it just didn't work out for him with us for whatever reason. You know, you can see it, like Thomas and Andrew said, at the beginning of the season, he's playing all the time. He's getting plenty of time out there, and it, you know, kind of dwindles out a little bit and a little bit less. Slavisa comes in, and he's just gone. I mean, I think there were times when he wasn't even on the subs bench. So, you know, nice guy. I was high on him. Sad to see that it didn't work out because I wish that it had. We need somebody on the outside that can, you know, break up the line a lot quicker. And, you know, at Rotherham and now at Preston, I think the pressure will be off of him a little bit and give him a chance to shine a little bit more. I wish him the best.
Yeah, and I wish him the best too. And honestly, I think he's going to do well there. They're excited. You know, I've seen many Preston North End supporters excited about the move because I think he fits what they want to do, and also I think it's a location thing too. I think it's going to work out for him, and it just didn't work out with us. So, you know, you move on, and I think this is the right move for both Ben Pringle and Fulham that we separate. And but like you said, David, we wish him the best. All right, let's move
but
on.
I'll tell you
I'm
what,
gonna go right.
If he scores against us. If he scores like a winning goal against us this coming season, I'm gonna throw something because that'll eat me up. But
okay, yeah, well
we'll see what happens.
That. Okay, we'll see. What
and Byrne too. If Dan scores too, it's just gonna kill me.
Okay, very good. Let's move on. Let's now move to a section I call the Cottage's Confidential Writer Spotlight, where I talk about articles that are written on Cottage's Confidential. We talk about them. Discuss them. So let's start with Andrew's article, and I'll get your take first there, David. Andrew wrote that this is entitled 2016 Fulham Offseason Plan Part 1, Cleaning House. He names these players, Nikolai Bodorov, Jazz Richards, Martin Stecklenburg, Ben Pringle, and Fernando Amorebieta as players he wants to go. Now, obviously, he's been right on two of them because Stecklenburg and Pringle are gone. But let's look at it as a whole. Do you agree with his list of players he wants to go?
Well, Bodorov, I don't think anybody would really miss him too terribly much. I'm afraid Slavisa might like him a little bit. I just have this gut feeling that the rough-and-tumble way he plays could fit into Slavisa's model a little bit. Jazz Richards, well, I tell you what, Jazz could just stay in Wales and not come back either because he plays well for them and he just does not do well for us. It's just,
yeah.
All you have to do is look back at some of the low light reels over the years or the last year and you'll see that. Stecklenburg, yep, we already talked about Pringle. Now, the one that I push back on is Fernando. You know, it's an he's an evil pleasure like cigars. You know, he's a yellow card and maybe a red card waiting to happen.
Yes.
And he always has been. But you know what? When he came back from the spell with Middlesbrough last time, he was a little more restrained, a little calmer. He probably took that look in Slavisa's eye and said, oh, crap. You know, and he straightened up a little bit. So he did a little bit better that time. He plays with passion. I know there's been rumors or whatever of him going on strike and not wanting to play, so we'll see what comes of that. But I still have a soft spot for him because when he's out there on the pitch, he's going full bore, sometimes too much full bore, but he puts his heart on the line and really tries hard. So I'd push back on Fernando as one that we could possibly keep in the back line. And one of Andrew's articles, I think this one or maybe one of the others, where he sets up different lineups out there, several different ones. I still think Nando has a spot in one of them.
You know, it's interesting that you pose it this way with Fernando Amorebieta, because I go back and forth here. But the one thing that I do notice, along with Michael Mantle doesn't have that reckless streak that Fernando Amorebieta has, but Amorebieta has something else, confidence. He has this confidence, and Mantle has it as well, except that, unfortunately, with his confidence, he does have that streak of recklessness. So I go back and forth on it. That's why I thought that this was an interesting discussion piece to talk about Andrew's article, and I was looking right at Fernando Amorebieta. So let's say right now you would want him to stay.
I would want him to stay, you know, maybe not as a starter all the time, possibly as a squad player, depending upon the lineup, whether it's, you know, three back or four back or five, whatever is happening back there. But I think he still has something to bring to the club, and I'm not convinced it's time for him to go quite yet. I mean, right now we haven't signed any defenders anyway, so it's kind of a moot point.
Right. Right. No, very, very good there, Dave. All right. Put you back on hold. I'm going to bring Thomas back on. All right, Thomas, what do you make of the Andrew's article? It's like I'm having a little issue getting you back on. There you are.
I'll start with Nikolai Bodrov. I will miss him for the goal against Derby, but that's not a reason to keep him by any stretch of the imagination. Two of the players have left, and that's good because Andrew was exactly right. Neither of those players had a place in the team, Stecklenburg or Pringle. As for Jazz Richards, he's just incredibly bad. He just doesn't play well no matter where we put him. He's just not good ever at all. I don't think he's played a good game, really. He plays okay. He plays solid, but he doesn't play good. And Amorebieta, I have to agree with David. I think he could stay for this season. I think he does have something to offer, but it's just the little things he does in the middle of games, they're just unnecessary. Like the red card against Leeds in the last minute, that handball was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. There's no reason to do that. They weren't even threatening. It was off a throw-in, and he just did it and got himself sent off and suspended. It made no sense. And he just does that way too much. And so I think if you can get a fee for him, sell him, but you have to make sure you have someone there to back him up, because he's not a bad center back. He's a good center back, and we need a good center back.
Right.
But I don't think he's the right center back. We need a left back more than anything, and I think that at this stage the best option would be him or Ryan Sessegnon, and he's, what, 16?
He's 16.
Yeah, and he's not Marcus Rashford. You know, you're not going to throw Ryan Sessegnon on the field and he's going to score a goal. He's not that player. And so it's hard to judge whether or not you need another left back, but I think we definitely do. And it's not going to come from Amorebieta.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Very interesting take. I'm going to bring Andrew back on to talk about his article. And, Andrew, again, I want to get your thoughts on what the guy shared, but also this. Again, I keep going back to talking to Mike about this last night. You bring up a very good point. All these players, I could see why you want them all to go to clean house. I'm not against cleaning house. Here's a thought, though. We need numbers right now. We need players. So in all of these cases, do you wait to get players in first before you would, say, get rid of someone like a Fernando Amorebieta or a Nikolai Bodrov? Is it more important to get the numbers in first before cleaning the rest of this house?
I guess a lot of that depends on how sure you are about signing some defenders. I mean, last year it seemed like Fulham were linked to all of these center backs and they all kept falling through. And if that's going to happen again, you don't want to let these guys go.
Right.
But I kind of agree with them on Amorebieta. Of these players, he's probably the best one by far. He's a pretty quality center back. He can play left back. okay if you need him to. The main issue I have with him is he's one of the few players left on the team that are still on Premier League wages. And that's just a lot of money for when he's in the championship and might not even be one of your top two center backs. Ideally, he wouldn't be one of your top two center backs, but you're paying him like he's a Premier League defender. And I feel like if just getting his wages out the books, you could probably pay two or three center backs that you pick up and afford them with just the wages that you're currently paying in Morbieta. That's kind of the main reason I'm thinking that he's gone. But as of right now, he might be the only left back. I mean, it's basically him and Tim Ream are the only two left backs that are on the squad right now. So
right.
If they don't sign a left back pretty soon, and probably two, because you're going to want to have a backup, I don't think he's going to go anywhere.
Okay. Very good there, my friend. Very, very interesting discussion about your article, because it's funny, Andrew, I've thought about this too. I'm glad that you wrote about cleaning house, because I think that's what Ethan needs, to clean house. But Mike brought up a wonderful point that's great, but he's scared that you're going to I guess you could say not bother, but really, really hurt these young players. Talking about the youngsters getting involved, you don't want to put them in a situation that they're not ready for. So he wants to make sure if you were to get rid of certain players that you have players coming in. So that's where he was coming. That's why I find this whole discussion about cleaning house interesting, because I think it's twofold. I agree with you that they need to clean house, but I also think that they need to make sure that they have players coming in. All right, Andrew, let's move on. Another article I want to discuss is called Cottagers' Contemplation, the Dembele Dilemma by James Eade, and I'm going to read a little bit from that and get your thoughts on this. And the first part is basically what it's talking about is who will replace Dembele. And then I'll read this part. It says, can Fulham still compete for signings? Maybe Fulham no longer have the pulling power of the bigger clubs in league and may well have lost the attraction, being seen as a club in decline rather than Premier League ambitions. Thomas Eyre of Cottagers' Confidence recently suggested a different approach to myself of scouting the lower leagues in search for new signings, with Nicky Ajose of Swindon Town being the topic of conversation. Unfortunately, the club missed out on the chance of signing the striker he recently signed with Charlton Athletic. James ends with, I'm in unison with the idea of attracting one of the top scorers of lower division to fill the vacancy left by the Frenchman. Who should the club sign in Dembele's absence? All right, Andrew, what are your thoughts about James's article, and who do you think they should sign?
I'm not sure who they should sign. A lot of this is probably going to depend on how Slavisa decides he's going to play. If he's going to play basically with one striker, assuming they keep McCormick, McCormick's going to be that one striker. So having someone like Moussa Dembele wouldn't be the end of the world, because where are you going to put him on the pitch if you're basically playing with three attacking midfielders? If you're going to play a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2, then you're going to need a second striker. Right now, it's probably Colley Woodrow, and I wouldn't really object to him getting a chance. He's really actually looked pretty good every time he's gotten a chance to play. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but if you have some speed from the wings and maybe from the midfield, it's not going to kill you. But we are going to need at least some depth there. Otherwise, there's just a lot of games in the championship. And when you throw in the FA Cup and the whatever, is it still the Capital One Cup? I can never remember which sponsor has that.
I think they changed the name. I think the Capital One Cup, I believe, is has changed its name, and I'm not sure what the name is, to be honest with you.
But when you have all those fixtures, you can't have McCormick playing 50-odd games every year, so he's going to need a break. And there's not a lot of striker depth. Right now you're looking at like George Williams as being, I think, your third or fourth striker. And, he has some talent, but it's still, that's a lot of pressure to put on a guy who's never really played a lot of minutes professionally.
Okay, very, very good there, my friend. Very good. I'm going to bring on Mr. Kettlehake back on. David, what are your thoughts about the striker position? Andrew brought up a very good point to talk about formation, talk about how Slavisa wants to play. That could be a factor here. I still think that we need a striker. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, as far as who, I'm right there with Andrew. I don't know. You know, the club, of course, is playing poker right now and keeping everything close to the vest. It's easier to bargain that way if they're actually looking at something and someone out there. You know, McCormick up top by himself, I think it's come up before on the show that's, he doesn't operate very well by himself up there as a lone striker. He tends to drift too much, and, you know, he doesn't have the wheels and the pace to get back up there as necessary. I'm okay with Colley Woodrow as well. I mean, look, when he got a little playing time last year, I mean, he scored, what was it, 4 goals in just a couple of games. He was on fire. And I don't know, I may be an outlier again. I'm still okay with Matt Smith, keeping him on and giving him some playing time. Somebody posted on Twitter yesterday, you know, he scored a back heel goal yesterday or today. And somebody went, hey, look, a back heel goal, you know, wasn't a header, was it just lumped up there? So, you know, he's got some talent as well. You have to adjust your play accordingly, of course. But I would like to bring somebody on in a Dembele-type mold, somebody, again, with a lot of speed that can break up through the line, you know, last second, pass it off, square it up to McCormick and let him put it in. It's needed. And, again, Andrew brings up a good point. That's a lot of matches. And
yep.
You're going to need a little bit more depth. I just don't have any names. You know,
okay.
I mean, you know, Dwight Gale, his name was bantered about a little bit. I don't know where that's falling
well,
right
he
now.
He ended up at Newcastle. David, let me ask you a couple names, you know, again, in some DMs with some other people we've been talking about a couple names. I'm going to throw two at you.
Okay.
A player that was released by Hull City is free, Sonny Aluko. Sonny Aluko,
yeah.
Is okay. And then I'll give you a name that actually someone just there's no speculation with this name. It's just someone to think about because this kind of goes a little bit with the article about lower leagues. Not that this player is in a lower league, but he came from the lower leagues, and he scored 17 goals with Huddersfield Town. Naki Wells. Both players that I'm talking about right now have a ton of pace. They're not, you know, and in Wells's case, he pretty much has scored about as many as Dembele, but you know they're not going to be the same type of player. How about a player like one of those two that I'm just suggesting?
Well, I saw right before the show some of the rumor about Aluko, and I looked him up real quick because again, thank you, WhoScored.com. He made 31 appearances, mostly as a sub, played 936 minutes for Hull. He had 3 goals. I didn't catch assists on there. He had a 6.52 rating, and one of his problems is weak finishing. Wells, I haven't had a chance to look up yet, but from what I remember of him, I kind of like him.
I do, too.
I don't know if he's quite in the mold of Musa, but
yeah.
I think he would be closer, and I wouldn't mind taking a look at him, especially if you could get him for a decent fee. You know,
yeah.
we really got screwed on Musa as far as, you know, not earning anything off of him.
Sure.
So we don't have, you know, any of that money to go back. I know we made money off of Mitroglou and some of the others, so we've got some of that out there. But, yeah, Wells, I think I would prefer over Aluko. But,
yep.
Yeah, pace. And to help out McCormick, yeah, let's get him on the bench.
Yeah. Let me stress, this is just me suggesting just something among some other co-hosts. That there is no speculation with Naki Wells, but I do want to mention, you know, I'm glad I kind of didn't want to mention the speculation, but you're right. There is Twitter speculation with Sonny Aluko. So thank you for mentioning that, David. No big deal. I just, you know, I kind of like it when we have something more concrete. But there is a good amount on Twitter linking Fulham to Sone Aluko. So that might be something that we'll have to see if it becomes more than speculation. All right, very good take there, David. I'm going to bring back on Thomas. Thomas, I want to get your thoughts about a striker, and you actually attributed to this article, and I thought about you right away. You know, it's funny because when I was thinking about a name, and I've just thought of Naki Wells, and Naki Wells is a championship striker, but he came from the lower leagues. Would that be someone that you might be interested in? Again, this is just me throwing it out there. There is no speculation linking Fulham to Naki Wells that I know of.
I'd definitely be interested in bringing him in. He's obviously has a really good goal-scoring record for Huddersfield in the same league that we are in currently. So I definitely think he could be a success. But there's a player that I've been looking at for a while now, and his name is, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but his name is Matt Taylor. And he played in League Two last year for Bristol Rovers, and he scored 27 goals in 38 appearances. And he's out of contract.
Right.
And it's the same. It's not the same thing as Aluko. I definitely think we should sign Aluko just to have another fast forward in the team. But Matt Taylor, a guy who scored that much, it's on a free. It's like signing Pringle and Lonergan. Sure, they weren't the greatest, but you had them, and they were good. And so it's just it's low risk, high reward if he turns out to be a really good player. And so I think that
okay. It's
definitely something Fulham should look at, looking to the lower leagues for Jose and other players like that.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because, again, I was thinking while you were saying this, and I know this player went for a fee to Leicester City, but Jamie Vardy was found at a lower league team. And he ended up going to Leicester City, and, you know, obviously that's paid off. So there's nothing wrong. I'm certainly not against that. I'm not against looking at a player at a lower league if he could be the right fit. It doesn't mean that he can't play, you know, just because he's playing at a lower league team. You score goals. If you score goals prolifically, then maybe a team should look at him. Listen, I'm not against your, you know, what you're bringing to the table, my friend. Not at all. All right, guys. We're going to have to speed things up a little bit, so we're going to jump ahead a little bit, and we're going to jump to the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable section. So I'm going to start with you, Thomas, and I want to start here because very interesting discussion going on with me today with Stuart Roberts, who's a Fulham supporter, and co-host Mike Gregg about this post on Friends of Fulham. So I'm going to read a little bit to you and then get your thoughts on this. Fulham supporter Stuart Roberts had a very interesting post on Friends of Fulham today, and it is entitled Defense and Lack of Signings. He summarizes, we need new defenders in now, so this defensive understanding has a chance of being ready for Newcastle. Cottage Talk co-host Mike Gregg responded by pointing out that now, with less numbers, with centre-backs specifically, since the departures of Byrne and Hutchinson, could give the coaches and players left a chance to build a unit. Now, we're just talking about the actual centre-back position because we're not really focusing on the full-backs, but it also gives all those players a chance to gel together. So where do you stand on this topic, Thomas? What are your thoughts about this?
I definitely agree with them that we're running out of players. You can't, you know, the whole squad overhaul thing is nice and all, but you're running out of players. And I think that with the current state of the team, we're strongest in a 3-5-2 formation with McCormack and another striker, Ayite, Fredericks, and then three center backs. But the problem is that we have Maddle, Stearman, Ream, and Amore Bieta might be gone. So you're really going to need to bring in two more center backs, one to be in the subs and another one to be a reserve or in the subs too, because you get one center back injured, and if you only have four, that means you got three playing and no one to put on if another one gets hurt. So I definitely think that more center backs need to be signed before we start running out of players.
Okay, and what do you make of Stuart's assertion that to do it now, because I believe where Stuart was going on this is that we signed many defenders late last year. late in the summer transfer window, Stearman was at the very end. Tim Ream was near the end. He wants them to. He wants them sooner than later. He wants the focus to be more on the defense, I guess, than midfielders and strikers. That the need right now is to bring in defenders right now so they can gel before the Newcastle match. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Def, I think he's 100% right. Stearman struggled partly, I believe, because he was brought in so late. He was brought in too late. He didn't have time to gel. He had to just go in there with four or five other players that he had never played with before and had no idea what their play style was like. They had no idea what his play style was like, except from watching him play against them. So he didn't really have a fair shot. And he's right that we don't necessarily need to sign attackers. We have George Williams can move to the left side. Ayite can play striker. George Williams is someone we don't talk about enough as a potential option to fill in the gap where then we don't need to sign another player. And the midfield, we have a lot of midfielders. We've got a lot of central midfielders that are all very talented. And so I think that the focus first has to be on the defense and goalkeeper. And then if you have extra time and extra money, then you can go out and look for that second striker, that third striker, that other left-sided player. But the defense, you have to build from the back in this league. It's all about keeping people out of your area. And too many times we get pushed so far back that they're just getting shot after shot. And eventually our goalkeepers aren't good enough to stop 20 shots a game. So they're going to score eventually. And so you just need to build from the back.
I totally agree with that, and I thought what Stuart brought to the table today on Friends of Fulham was interesting. Also, Mike's take is that it also gives an opportunity right now for the players that are there to make a mark. So maybe they can impress the coaches right now. But I agree with the assertion that again, I like the fact that they're looking at strikers. I like the fact that they're looking at potential wingers too. And midfielders, just in general, central. I would like them to bring in a central midfielder, but I think the priority needs to be defense, and I think that's the point that Stuart was making. I'm going to bring David on right now. David, what are your thoughts about this? Because Mike, I thought, made a good point about given the opportunity right now, say in Ireland, for these players to gel. I think that's a valid point, but then Stuart really started this by saying, let's not wait too long. Let's do it now. Let's bring in. Let's upgrade now. Let's bring the defenders in now and not wait too late. Be ready for that Newcastle match. Give them a chance to play together. What are your thoughts about that?
Please, sooner than later. Here's a fun activity. Go to the Fulham website, look at the first team, and look at their defenders. And there are eight defenders listed. But of those eight, one is Bodaroff, one is Richards, and one is Fernando. And another is Jack Grimmer, who's relatively untested at this level right now. That doesn't leave very many players. It just, you need some additional strength back there. I mean, are we really going to start against Newcastle, a newly relegated team who's going to be fighting tooth and nail? They've got Rafa Benitez as their coach. Are we really going to put the same defense that we had last year, that gave up more goals than anybody but two other teams? We're going to put them up against Newcastle, who's going to be fighting like mad to get right back up into the Premiership. I mean, fool me once, shame on you. You know how that goes. Fool me twice, shame on me. We can't. So, yes, we need some more defenders. We need them now. We need a chance to gel, to play together, to have this time together in Ireland, and I think they're going to Portugal after this, and learn. You can score as many goals as you want. Look at us last year. We were a goal-scoring machine, but in the end it doesn't matter if you let in twice as many goals as you score. You're going to come up a little short. So, and please get somebody that can work on set plays. So...
I totally agree.
I agree with Stuart. It's great. We're looking at some strikers, looking at some wingers, but please, let's let's all sign a petition and get some damn defenders in right now.
I hear you, my friend. I'm going to bring Andrew on. Andrew, I'm going to give you the final word on this. What's interesting about this, because I heard from Stewart directly, and he thought this is something that was very important, and he's like, check out Friends of Fulham, check out what I wrote in Friends of Fulham, and he had a lot of comments off of that, and I do agree with him. And when I use this example, Andrew, I was watching Italy. Why is Italy so good in the in the Euros and the World Cup? Well, it tends to start with the defense, especially the defense that they have this year with the Juventus back four. I mean, it really is the Juventus back four, and it's solid. And if you look at the teams that went up, they all had solid defenses. So I'm curious where you fall on this. Do you agree with Stewart's assertion that we need to bring in defenders now?
It's a hard choice, because if the choice is just bring in guys now or bring in the guys you really, really want a month from now, I'd go with the guys you really, really want a month from now. But since I don't know what the team's really trying to do, it's hard to say.
Right.
If you're pretty confident that you're going to be able to get the guys that you want, then you should hold out and get those guys. I'd rather do that than just kind of settle for who's available now. I feel like Fulham have done a lot of settling in the last few years, and that hasn't done very well for them. But at the beginning of the season, you might be able to get away with playing a couple of games with the defense we have. I mean, obviously we need a center back. That's the thing that needs to come in. And we need to sign some left backs or get some left backs on loan. I think a lot of this might be that they have a good idea of some guys that are going to come in on loan again, and they're just kind of waiting for the early training camps to get done with some Premier League teams who are going to offer some guys down on loan, because that tends to happen just a little bit later. So if they've kind of got some of that worked out, maybe that's a reason why some stuff hasn't been happening.
No, that's a very good point. And Mike and I, again, going back to yesterday's show, talking about the conundrum here, and you actually mentioned this as well. I want them to get the right players. So I'm conflicted here, Andrew. I want them to bring in players now, just like Stewart said. But I don't want them to bring in players just for the sake of bringing in players, what you're talking about. I want them to be the right players. This season, it seems like they're being very picky, maybe too picky. But I could see both sides of the argument. I could see where you're coming from, because I want them to get the right players. But I also see what Stewart's saying. The season's coming up close. We need the players now. So it's a tough, it's a tough situation. But if I have to make a ruling here, I'm saying I want the right players. I'd rather them be in sooner than later, but I want them to get it right, Andrew. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Okay. All right, very good. Guys, we got to pick up the pace a little bit. Let's now move on to here, and Andrew, I'm going to go right back to you. Second topic in the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. Do you think opening up against Newcastle United at home is a good thing or a bad thing?
It can be a little bit of both. It gives you a pretty good early test, because Newcastle hasn't really blown up their team like a lot of teams that get relegated. They're going to try to come with basically the same team that they had last year, which there's a lot of quality on it. That's a team that, when you looked at the players on the team, you really didn't understand how they got relegated. But again, that could also be a good thing, because that team just didn't work last year, and it might still not work. That's kind of been their MO for the last few years. They seem to spend a lot of money, and they seem to have a lot of good players, but just nothing ever seems to work. So maybe their first game, a lot of these players' first game in a new league, maybe you can kind of catch them off guard, because they're not sure what to expect. I'm really curious to see what happens. It's kind of fun to play a big team. I know some Newcastle fans, so at least there'll be some banter. But I'm just it's it's something that I'm looking forward to, and I'm not sure whether it's a good or bad thing. It's kind of up in the air. It could go either way.
Okay. So you're kind of sitting on the fence. Not a problem. Mr. Kettlehake, I'll go to you. Good or bad thing opening up at home against Newcastle?
Yeah, I'm a little terrified, but before I want to jump back for 1 second to what we were talking about, if I could, for just a minute.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I think it's David Hawley that says, is it your first 12 games are the most important?
That after 12,
you look at the table.
That was Mike Reich, yeah.
Was that Mike? Okay, my apologies,
yeah.
Mike.
No, that's okay.
So that almost plays into this Newcastle anyway. Whatever we do, you're right. Bring in the correct players, but please don't wait till the end. So they do have a chance to work together. They're professionals. They know the game, but they still – I mean, if you look back at – remember when Stearman came in late, he and Ream looked like Keystone Cops out there once in a while. They were running into each other. They weren't communicating. They didn't know, am I the boss? Are you the boss? You know, it was not great for a while. So they do need a chance to play together. So, you know, after 12 matches, I want to be able to look back and go, okay, here's where we are on the table. And, you know, this is a good indicator as to where we're going to end up at the end of the season. So, to echo Andrew, I'm kind of on the fence with this too, because you know what? You win this, or even if you tie, you know, really a tie, I think in this one's, is not quite a win, but it's pretty darn close. That sets in motion, it can set in motion your season. But if you get blown out of the water, because there's a lot of good teams that are in this. I mean, you look at Brighton Hove Albion and some of the ones that didn't quite make it, some of the Alcerans, you know, Derby's going to be tough again, Newcastle, all these. If you get blown out of the water by one of these top tier type championship teams right now, or what we suspect will be a top tier championship team, that's going to hurt. I don't want heads to drop after the first game if we get shellacked, you know, 5-0 or something. So it's exciting. It's a little terrifying. I'm looking forward to it because I think it's going to be on TV here. So bring it on, I guess.
Okay.
Just get some more players.
Very good there, David. All right, Thomas, I'll give you the final word on this topic. Good or bad thing opening up against Newcastle at home?
It really depends on who we sign, if I'm being honest. You can sign the two best center backs in the world, but if you don't give them time, they're not going to play as well as they could together. The fact that we could go up in our first game against players like Mitrovic, Sissoko, and Wijnaldum is just absolutely terrifying, and I'm debating whether or not I'm even going to watch the game or just sleep through it and hope that when I wake up, it's not like 6-0.
Okay. The consensus here, everyone's terrified of this match. I'm actually looking forward to it. I would rather them open up against Newcastle. Maybe, I guess I'm in the minority here. I want them to face Newcastle. I think it's a huge test. Yes, it could be ugly, but I think it forces them to focus right off the bat, Thomas. That's where I'm going on this. It's going to, you know, again, this is the first match of the season. This is a Friday night. This is a big deal. This could, if it goes well, Thomas, this could really set them up well for the beginning of the season. So I look at this as a challenge. I want them to play Newcastle. Do you see where I'm going on this?
Oh, yeah, I completely understand what you're saying. If they win this game, it's a launch pad. They
could catapult
them.
They
beat Newcastle United. You can beat anyone in this division. I consider them the best raw talent team in the league. But the chances of them beating Newcastle United where they are now, they really need to be inspired. They can't come out the way they usually do. The team never seems to have much inspiration except for games against Queen's Park Rangers, and you can see how those games go. They need to be inspired. Otherwise, it's just going to be like Brentford, where you're getting destroyed in the first half, and there's no real setup to counteract that.
Right, and that's why when I saw that this was the match, and you bring up all the fears, and I understand the fears. My thought was, if we're serious about promotion, we all want promotion, then you have to be on point from the first match on. You need to be focused from the first match on. Sink or swim. So I'm saying bring it on, kind of what David Kettlehake said, bring it. Why not? It could be ugly, but it could be, like you said, it could be a catapult to something good, because they need to get off to a fast start. If you checked out the fixtures, the first 12 matches are vital that they get a good amount of points, because then it gets much harder. Believe it or not, it gets much harder. That's their chances is the first quarter of the season and the third quarter of the season, really the parts of the fixtures that they can make hay. The second and the fourth are very difficult. So that's why I'm looking forward to this match. All right, guys, one final topic. We are going just a little bit over. So I'm going to start with you, Thomas. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you that Fulham have only signed 2 players this summer so far, which includes Michael Mantle at the beginning of the season, but he was a lone player. So really only 1 new player. How worried are you, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest?
I would say probably an 8. I think that there's a little more activity than what you see. As I think David said, the club really keeps their cards close to their chest. They don't let anyone really see anything until it's all official. And so they could have 3 or 4 signings lined up for the next week, and we would never know about it. And so I'm concerned, but I do trust the club that they have targets lined up for the season.
Okay. So maybe you got this backwards. Did you mean a 2? You're not that worried, or 8? You're really worried.
Oh no, I'm really worried. But I do think that there's a little bit more, that they do have a little bit more going on than what it seems on the surface.
Gotcha. Okay. So you are really worried. So you have it at an 8. Very good. I will now go to Mr. Kettlehake. How worried are you?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, I give it an 11. because, no, I mean, really, again, what Thomas said, these, as much stick as we like to give the club, you know, they want to win. They make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. But, you know, they want to win. They want to bring in the best players. I would have to say I'm 100% certain that they have many irons in the fire right now in England and beyond. I would say that they are probably looking significantly outside the league, using some of Tony Khan's analytics and scouting, a combination of that. Look, Slavisa was in Copenhagen last week, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So he didn't go there, I doubt, no offense to anybody in Copenhagen. I don't know that he went there, you know, for a vacation. He's scouting. He's looking. So, really, I'm about where Thomas is, a 7 or an 8.
Okay.
I know that you and Mike have a over under or something, a meeting a week from today or tomorrow.
Yes,
you know, that if
yes,
they haven't signed anybody that by then, then it's time to really get worried. So
we do.
Yeah, it's going to have to roll out pretty soon here. I would suspect that we'll get news of a signing here in the next day or two to kind of keep us rabid fans a little happy. So
seven or eight, David.
Right now,
I understand that, and I really hope you're right about the signing. And if I talk to Mike next week around this time, and they haven't signed someone else, I'll be extremely worried. I'll be at that 11. I definitely understand that.
Yep.
All right. I'm gonna bring on Andrew for the final word here on this topic. Andrew, where is your worry level from 1 to 10?
Right now it's probably a 3 or a 4. I'm not that worried. I think they're gonna get some stuff done. I actually think that it's kind of, I'm not really worried by the lack of rumors. I think the team is, the current front office they have, they don't leak anything. So any leaks are going to be coming from agents or the teams that they're in negotiations with. And if they're other tight-lipped teams or their teams in other countries, you're just not going to hear that much. So I don't think that the lack of rumors really means that there aren't any things that could be just about to be announced. It could very well happen that, you know, next week they announce four or five guys. I'm more worried about, I just simply have no idea what their philosophy under Slavisa is, what kind of formations they're going to play, and what players they even need. So it's really hard for me to even look at the team and say, what do they need? Because I have no idea what they're going to do. And I'm hoping that they have at least have an idea of what they're going to do, and they're not just going out and trying to find good players and try to fit them into – try to build a system around good players. I really hope that they have some idea of what they're going to do and are actually searching for the right players to fill the needs that they have.
And we can end the show here, Andrew, because this is something that Mike and I keep going back to the show last night, but we talked about this. Full need to find the players to fit what Slavisa needs, to play a style he wants to play. And I'll pose this to you, and this is how we'll end the show. Because I said to Mike, does bringing in Floyd indicate to you that a pacey winger who can also be a striker, does that tell you something of the direction that they're going? Because I actually think it does. I think that he's acknowledging what they need. He wants to play with pace. If you look at his history with Watford and also in Maccabee Tel Aviv, he wants a fast team. He wants a team that plays like Jurgen Klopp's teams. So let me ask you, because I think the signing to me was an indicator of the direction that the team's going in. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it is. I think that kind of makes it see that they're probably going to be playing more of like a 4-2-3-1.
Right.
More of like a pressing 4-2-3-1, because that's kind of what his strength is. That Floyd can play all three positions in those attacking bands, and in a 4-2-3-1 might even be able to play as the striker as well. McCormick can play as the striker in the 4-2-3-1. He can play as kind of the withdrawn striker in that formation. It's a lot of flexibility. The problem with that is that we just don't have the defense. You really need two pretty stout central midfielders, and I'm kind of iffy on what we have there, and you really need two strong center backs and some pacey fullbacks, and we have nobody on the left, and the right back Fredericks is there, but you know, he's still young, so it's going to require a lot of signing simply because that wasn't what we were playing last year, so we don't really right. have a lot of those pieces in place.
And that's a good point, and that's why I personally thought, you know, again, I could be wrong about this, because, Andrew, this is something that when you were saying this, I was thinking the same thing. Last year, I think they were signing players without an identified plan. Like, it was just, we're going to bring in players, and then we're going to, you know, and then we're going to make them fit. I'm hoping that this season they are finding players that fit a style, fit a way Slavisa wants to play. I think that's necessary. This is only one signing, and I hope that there are more to come. And, Andrew, we definitely have to wrap up the show. It's unfortunate because we have two very good topics from the Fulham supporters, and we're going to have to leave that to the next Cottagers Confidential Roundtable episode. Really good questions. One actually goes to what we're talking about with finding a team to play the way Slavisa wants, but we're going to have to wait for another show. I want to thank you again for doing the show with me, my friend. You were fantastic.
It's always a pleasure. I have a lot of fun.
I hope you do. Let me bring on David. David, any final thoughts?
Really just one thing that I saw, and no time to discuss it now, but I saw that somebody had posted that the Riverside Stand, July 3rd is come and gone, which was the date that they had to put a shovel in the ground or the Thames or whatever, and I don't believe anything happened, so the question begs, what's going on with that? So maybe we can find something out later. But, Russ, thanks for inviting me back. Again, I had a great time,
okay.
Great discussion. Nice to talk to you and Andrew, also, Andrew and Thomas as well, and look forward to doing it again sometime.
Absolutely. This is a wonderful episode, and thank you, David. You are fantastic. I want to bring Thomas on for one final thought here. What are your final thoughts, my friend? First of all, before you share that, I just want to say thank you. You were fantastic in your debut on Cottage Talk.
Thank you very much, Russ. Thanks for inviting me on to the show. And my only final thought is that we should sign James' husband.
I'm there with you. I'm actually there with you. Again, there's been nothing concrete on that. There's just been a bunch of speculation on Twitter about that. We'll see, because I actually think that would be a great sign. That's a very good thought. And what's interesting about him, Thomas, is that I think he can be had for small money, because Middlesbrough are now up in the Barclays Premier League, so they might just want to offload him. So I'm there with you.
I think every Fulham fan who followed the team over the last couple of years is with us too. He's been a great player for us and would mirror Fredericks.
It's a good fit.
Five at the back. Yeah,
he's a good
perfect for a five at the back formation with Fredericks.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's what they need. He's just the right fit. He would play well on the other side of Fredericks. I just think it's a very good fit. I hope that happens. Again, there's nothing concrete except some speculation, some Twitter speculation. There are no articles on it, just some Twitter speculation. But we shall see. All right. All three of you guys were great, but we need to wrap up this show of Cottage Talk. For Andrew, David, and Thomas, I'm Russ Schulman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Boys and girls, London calls.